The field of gravity control and even warp drive is the more recent paper I've done for the State 2 conference. I think he was heading in the right direction. I unfortunately believe that some people at the CIA may have been feeding him a line of BS to try to you know, steer him away from what they were really doing. Not Gordon's fault, but he had too much trust in the people that he trusted, unfortunately.
Well, I'd like to jump in here for a minute about that. I'm not sure Gordon really trusted all these people that much. He was kind of like trust and verify. And don't you get that impression, Jim Morris, that he knew that they were playing him a little bit? But I think he did quite a lot of research and showed his intellect on this project. He believed in it completely and thoroughly.
Jerry, before we go to Jim's response, is Bill on the line? Bill Ryan, are you on the line?
Well, hi there. It's a pleasure to join you guys. And I was very sad to hear the news this morning, and thank you very much for inviting me to a short tribute here.
Hey, Bill.
Bill Ryan, it's great to hear your voice.
It's great for you to come on, Bill. You know, I was sharing with people what happened at the television show, how CIA tried to make them an offer they shouldn't refuse. In terms of, if you remember that little anecdote when we met with Gordon and I.
Well, this is Jim. I would like to get one thing real straight here, and I do tend to believe this. Gordon continually emphasized to me that he never, ever worked for the CIA. Okay, now, technically speaking, was he a hired employee? You know, did he have an employment file? Did he get a regular monthly paycheck? No. Okay? So in that respect, technically, I do believe Gordon when he said he never technically worked for the CIA. But he had been connected with people. With the CIA all the way back to his manhood in New Orleans. And to address Gary's question, yes, I think he kind of held him at arm's length. I think he understood, like all of us know now, you can't trust them. They live in a world of lies and deceit, and so you never really know who's telling the truth and who's not. But then on the other hand, I think he was a product of his own time. He grew up, as I did, during the Cold War, and the whole idea was, you know, James Bond, okay, if you work for the government and if you work for the CIA, some kind of other, you're one of the guys. And so he just kept playing with them, kept dealing with them, you know, throughout his whole life. So in answer to your question, Jerry, yeah, I think he did. Played ball with him, but I think he also took a little bit of a grain of salt. But he felt like that. Yeah.
This is Richard here. I wanted to interrupt you, but I really wanted to ask you what you thought about Gordon's. Gordon and Dealey Plaza, Gordon and Dallas and JFK. What's going on with that? Because there were people who claimed that he was involved in others, and then Gordon. I asked him one time. And he just said no, but he never really wanted to lay that to rest, I thought. And I just wanted to know what you thought his involvement was.
He never wanted to lay that to rest. That's an interesting comment there, Richard. A little something to it. I did get him to it. Needless to say, because, you know, one of my first big, you know, fields of interest would be the Kennedy assassination. So I did go with it and try to nail him down. And he has pretty well convinced me that I don't believe he had anything to do with the Kennedy assassination.
I didn't think so either.
The main reason for that is, if he had, he wouldn't have lived this long, okay? He pretty much convinced me that he was at two shores in New York with Elizabeth Taylor, reportedly. The problem is that because he was mixed up in some of the things going on in New Orleans, connected to Clay Shaw and Guy Bannister and David Ferry, and he knew some of those people. And that there was some interesting things. And I think basically the bottom line is that I think he understood a lot of what was happening. He like everybody else who actually had a direct connection to the assassination, they sensed, they knew, but they couldn't prove who did what, when, where, and how.
I just want to say, this is Carrie, that I just want to say, Jim, that I do think that he knew what happened, and I think he was an insider. In that world, I think he was very careful about revealing that. Bill Ryan, I asked you a question. I don't know if you got a chance to think about it or if you remember that incident where actually he did come in. That was the only time, and after all the years I've known him, that he actually acknowledged working, if you want to talk, with the CIA. I agree that he wasn't on the payroll. He didn't get money from them on a regular basis, but I can assure you he worked for them for all intents and purposes. That was the only time when he acknowledged.
He said it was a retainer that he was on, a third party.
Okay. He did it at that time.
Technically, he wasn't an employee, but he was, you know.
Well, when he made this off, I have to say, when he made the offer to the producer, he was acting on their behalf, very literally, and he had a conversation with the television producer for them on their behalf. And I don't know, Bill Ryan, do you remember that?
Yes, I do. I remember it pretty well. And it's clear to me that the employment lines in the agencies are not the same as there would be in a normal corporation. There are assets and there are relationships and there are assumptions, and there are unwritten exchanges and agreements. He was definitely involved in that network. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt about it whatsoever. And I agree with you completely, but he was always very cagey about what he would reveal. He was actually a very honorable man. I didn't know him nearly as well as quite a lot of the other people who were contributing his tribute, but I considered myself privileged to have met him a little bit back in 2006, 2007, when Project Camelot befriended him. And I'm sure you've mentioned this a dozen times already, later on the show, but Kerry's interview with him back in 2006, which he was very, very proud of, was one of Kerry's finest, and it really does give a good portrait of the man. And we enjoyed being with him, the time we spent with him. We were always had lots of fun with him. He was a good guy. He had a heart inside quite a gruff exterior, and his occasional bite was, his occasional bark was much, much, much worse than his bite ever was. And I think he was a very good man. Sorry to have lost him.
Well, let me interject something here real quickly. I have a question in the chat room, and it seems like one of the unknowns is a friend of Gordon's, and we don't know who it is. But they brought up a question, and it seems like Shmoopy, and I think you've read it, Angela, is somebody who knows Gordon.
I'll go ahead and read it if you like. It's question says from an unidentified individual, Gordon always said he had safeguards in terms of CDs with information in case anything had happened to him. Are any of you expecting something to happen to these? Is the question.
Well, we've been talking about, I'd like other people to answer, but I do want to say right here, again, we mentioned, in case you weren't tuning in, a huge library. He had a very substantial UFO library that was, he said, the best in the world. That's how he termed it to me. Now, the CDs, I agree, he probably had safeguards out there. I have to say, Project Camelot didn't get one of those, to my knowledge. So I guess they're in other hands. I don't know. I do think Bill will appreciate this sort of description. I can see the CIA, pulling up in front of his residence, unloading, and loading the boxes, whatever he had coming through his stuff. I can see them doing that as we speak, as a matter of fact, unless someone has made prior arrangements. And I really wish that I had known he was going to be passing. Like I said, I would have been at his bedside to get his last statements. But I think if there are CDs out there, he probably was smart enough to give them to the right people.
I'd have to second that. I think it's entirely possible that he has some stuff stashed away. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm not particularly waiting with bated breath to receive anything like that. But it wouldn't surprise me if something showed that.
Well, I would just add.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Jim on that. Gordon mentioned that several times, and naturally, if you were in Gordon's shoes, you would want people to think that you have information so that they would be part of your safety net. And so it's a question of whether I really had it, but if he really had it, unfortunately, we don't know what the provisions are and where it is. Unfortunately, Kerry may be right. It may have already been carted away.
Yeah, I would just jump in here. This is Richard. And I suspect Gordon does have, yet he did mention to me that he had CDs worth of material. And
yeah,
the question is, like, what actually is in it? I mean, with Gordon, he spoke in superlatives all the time. And, you know, I just...
I agree with that.
It's just how he was. And, you know, a lot of the times he would say certain things, I just knew it wasn't the case. Like, for example, he was constantly talking about how his computers were getting hacked. And when I saw him with his computers, he did not really have very good skills in operating his computers. I can just tell you that. And I just felt like really what he needed was someone with some tech skills to kind of to hook him up. I think it ever happened. But it was like that with Gordon. And regarding what he knew, he obviously had some very intense conversations with some very heavy inside people. And I do suspect that there is important information that's out there that I think Kerry could be quite right that CIA or some agencies trying to scarf up right now if they haven't already. And I just wonder where Gordon's friends were, if Sur is nearby. I think Sur is in Asia last time I kept track of any of this. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know who's got what of Gordon's material and where the heck it even is.
Well, Rich, let me throw this in. I think this is really important to understand. First and foremost, I mean, he was a brilliant guy, there's no question about it. And he really understood technical things. And as you said, he did hobnob with some very high-powered, knowledgeable people. But first and foremost, he was an entrepreneur. Okay? Always trying to get something going. Always trying to raise some money. And that goes all the way back to when he did one of his most proudest accomplishments, this World's Fair exhibit he did down in New Orleans as a very young man. And he kept trying to get things going like just now. With an entrepreneur and with that kind of person, when you go up and you say, hey, how's it going? They'd never come back and say, oh, I'm having a hard time with it. I can't seem to raise any money.
Right.
And, no, it's always, everything's great. Everything's great. We got a big deal coming up. We got high-powered people involved. You know, it's going to be great. And I say this, and I'm not trying to belittle Gordon. This is the way you operate if you are a successful entrepreneur. And so I think there was an element of that in everything he said. A lot of times, I know there's some things I was involved in, and he would come out, and I would hear him flat tell people that he had the backing of the CIA. Well, he didn't have the backing of the CIA, but he had people connected with the CIA who were somewhat supportive. Because I think they were trying to pick his brain. They wouldn't know what he knew. But that doesn't mean that there was an actual locked-in signed contract business relationship.
Well, I have to say that there was. I believe him on that. I actually think he had shown me documentation. I probably have it on my computer, as a matter of fact, that he sent me all kinds of stuff. And maybe I shouldn't be saying that because I guess the CIA is going to be at my door next time. At any rate, I think that he definitely had a deal with at least a portion of the CIA. And you know, I've been told that the CIA has basically gone. What did they say? They've broken into the mainstream, and they've actually broken up. Unbeknownst to the people out there, so that when you talk CIA, you're not even talking about the same organization all the time. There are so many different factions.
Before we go any further,
it's been fractionalized for years.
Guys, before we go any further, I need to inform you that at break, I'm going to hang up on all of you and Mike, the producer, will call you all back. We're having bandwidth issues right now, so they will call, he will contact all of you, and we will, have to reset this during the break. So I needed to give you a heads up on it. So go ahead, Jim.
Let me say one thing about what Jim and Kerry are talking about. I think they're both right. And you could say, well, how's that possible? And that's because the CIA is a very secretive organization, and I seriously doubt that the left hand knows what the right hand is doing at all times. So his contacts there usually formally do a third party or whatever, and as far as I know, Ron Pandolfi was the only contact he really had that he made public. But Ron never really verified that. Of course, I only talked to him once or twice. Jim, have you ever made contact with Ron Pandolfi?
Yes, I've spoken to him on more than one occasion. My impression was that he was like so many others, including some of us, that we kept up with Gordon. We tried to help him out if we could. We were interested in what he was doing, but it was mostly just a monitoring thing. Let's just see what he's doing. You know, is he going to turn into anything?
And no doubt about it, Gordon was an entrepreneur. Jim's right about that. I never had a conversation with Gordon about anything unless he wanted some money.
He didn't come
to camp. But that doesn't mean he's wrong.
Right. No, I agree with you completely. I'm a big Gordon North fan.
All right. Well, I have to say that someone asked in the chat whether he had the patents. He did. He had said file patents on the ARV and something else to do free energy. So he had definitely, I mean, he was very, very serious. He had worked with Ramsey Clark, actually. He didn't just know him. He worked for him. So people may not know that. He was very proud of his association with Ramsey Clark. And again, I mean, I want to stress people just, he was such a brilliant man. He actually said to me at one time that he felt very lonely at the top, so to speak. And I think he was actually not speaking from ego, and maybe Bill Ryan remembers this, where he actually said that he just didn't find very many people that were all that intelligent on planet Earth, and that he felt kind of like in a minority. And I think he really was puzzled by that. I mean, he wasn't talking from an ego standpoint. What do you think, Bill?
I can confirm that. I'd love to remember the exact quote. It's probably in our interview somewhere.
It was beautiful. Yeah, it was beautiful.
It is exactly what he said. Yeah, it's exactly what he said.
Yeah. I can certainly concur with that from my own interactions with Gordon. He's an extremely intelligent person. That's exactly right, Kerry. And you know, when you're that way out there, you're going to feel lonely. And Gordon, in particular, wasn't just extremely intelligent. He was just pushing past the boundaries of what ordinary people, you know, ordinary reality was for people. I had a couple of lunches with him in various diners, and I just remembered a lot of times just stopping and looking around, and here's me and Gordon Novell sitting in a diner, just, you know, surrounded by a whole bunch of people who had no clue of what he was into. And I think that was Gordon's life. He was constantly right out there on the edge, and he knew.
I agree. Yeah, I'm sitting here.
Yeah.
Well, let me chime in here. You know, the Gordon Novell that I remember was a flamboyant man and an extreme braggart, and I think he earned that right. One of the most highly opinionated people, and will tell you whether you liked it or not, what his opinions were. And, oh, we need to talk about this, too. You know, his conflict, and I would love to get Jack Serfati on the line if I could, but I don't think that we'll be able to do it today.
Well, I think you should try, because I think he'd be willing to come on. Jack himself is just a flamboyant guy. I have to say, it's funny you mention his name, because I guess everyone was party to. I don't know if everyone got the emails, but I got the, you know, the discussions and the arguments that went on between Jack and Gordon, and these are just notorious. I think they're probably going to be go down in history. People who saved those as two men who would call each other names. Both of them being highly intellectual, at the same time, both of them being highly flamboyant. And one minute they hated each other's guts, and the next minute they loved each other to death and couldn't say enough nice things about each other. And this is one thing that was true of Gordon's personality, that he might love you one minute, he might hate you the next, but if he hated your guts and wanted to kill you, if you did something honorable in his eyes, he would change his opinion of you like in an instant and suddenly, you know, love you again.
Yeah.
That's right. Interesting about Jack and Gordon. He used to send me pictures of them with women having dinner. And it was kind of a one-upmanship. And so it's kind of I've had my battles with somebody and still do. And I've had bad with Gordon, but they never were terminal, you know. In other words, he was always a friend. He would call you back.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Jack,
always call you back.
Jack used to tell us about everybody, including Gordon, that we weren't even wrong. We were less than wrong. Now, I don't know how you can be less than wrong, but, you know, that's Jack. You got to love him anyway. But Gordon and Jack.
Yeah, you had two huge egos bumping heads. There, which was.
Yeah.
But he was told to do. He was told to work with Jack. Ron Pandolfi, the CIA, told him to work with Jack. That's what he told me. And so he had to be friendly with him. And he was grudgingly doing it for a while. But then he actually got to know Jack. I think he actually got to like him. In spite of himself, because you could tell by the email sort of discussion, and then he was just out of his mind. I mean, he just would rant on and on. I guess they also. I mean, the funny thing is, Gordon would go toe to toe with people like Hal Kudoff and Jack Sarfati on the technical. He didn't just let it ride.
You know, that's really true, and I always was amazed by that facet of Gordon, because Hal Putoff and Sarfati are not just regular physicists, they're famous and incredibly accomplished. Gordon was not a physicist, but he was never afraid to do it exactly as he said, just to go right up there and argue his case for his torsion field physics model, and I had always had a hard time following a lot of the arguments. I would glean them, I think, like probably a lot of us did. And went right in there and just argued his case.
I don't know about you, Richard, but I understood that about as much as I understand Star Trek's warp drive.
Yeah. I mean, I've been trying to get up to speed over the last few years, but especially when you and I were dealing particularly with Gordon. It was a struggle for me scientifically, I will be honest with you, to try to follow the nuances of what he was talking about when it came to anti-grav and avionics. And I know that Paul Richard Price here has studied this quite a bit. and I'm sure many listeners know this very well, but for me, coming into the field, coming into the argument at that time, it was a challenge. And I have to thank Gordon, honestly and truly, for opening my horizons on a lot of this technology. And I had many, many discussions with Gordon about a lot of things, but he was one of the people who really kept pushing me to continually broaden my own take on this whole phenomenon, particularly technically, to gain technical skills and knowledge about a lot of this.
Well, he certainly explained it to me in the discussions we had, to where it made sense. And in a general way, I understood what he was saying, and it made a lot of sense. And I'll never forget one thing that really got me going was he just said, he once told me early on, that he said, you know, galaxies rotate. And so I immediately got a picture of, you know, progress of these huge swirls that are the galaxies. And I'm going, yeah. And he says, what makes them move?
Richard and Jen.
I love that.
We are about to go on break, and Richard has to leave. Now, Jim, and I'm sorry I'm interrupting you. We have about 1 minute left until break, so I have to kind of close it down. And Richard, thank you again for joining the roundtable. Okay.
Well, it was a pleasure. I wish it had been under different circumstances. You know, my interactions with Gordon were, as I said before Jim came on, I said, you know, Gordon, I loved him, and he'd make me crazy at the same time, but I will really miss that, and I'm happy to be here. I'm just sorry that it was under these circumstances.
Well, maybe we can get you back on the show later on in more pleasant circumstances, Richard, and I do appreciate you joining in today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, and Jim, I'd like for you to finish the discussion after break, and they will try to call you back. Okay, Jim?
Okay, so I hang up and they're coming again.
Oh, yeah, and Nighthawk will be contacting you, the producer. And
okay, now, Richard, I'm going to give you about another 30 minutes, okay?
Not a problem, Jim. Not a problem at all. That'll work.
Okie doke. All right, I'm getting off then, and I'll wait for the call.
Okay, thank you, Jim.
All right, bye-bye.
Goodbye. And we're going to try to see if we can get also Jack Serafati online to talk about his story with Gordon Novell, which is quite a colorful one, if I'm correct. And let's just say we will be coming back in shortly with the Paul Richard Price Show, the extended version, with my roundtable of Jerry Pippin Now, Gary Cassidy, Bill Ryan, and Jim Marks, and we will try to even get Jeff Roddy on.